It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. 1 year into the coronavirus pandemic, some people who have been infected with the virus say they still feel symptoms ranging from brain fog to fatigue to shortness of breath long after they test negative. These are the so-called long haulers. And for some of these long haulers, it feels like there's no end in sight. Yvonne Heapy is a science teacher from Washington State, and she first got sick in March, but the real trouble didn't start until 5 weeks after she contracted COVID.
I knew something was definitely wrong. My heart started beating rapidly, out of breath, hot sweats, cold sweats, really bad headaches to the point where I couldn't function during the day. My days were probably 2 or 3 hours long, and then I had to go back to bed. And then I started to get brain fog issues and slurred speech issues. So I just sort of let the doctors do the tests. They didn't find anything. It just felt like, oh my gosh, I'm going crazy. I'm going insane. And literally it feels like you're dying slowly. And yet nobody's giving you answers.
As Yvonne searched for medical help, she tried to learn to live with her symptoms.
You're trying to get out of the illness. You're trying to say, okay, I can fight this. I can get over this. And then you start having maybe 1 or 2 good days where maybe you can get out of bed and you can do things and you try to fight through it and you say, okay, I can get it done. I'm going to ignore the pain. But then you collapse. Your heart won't let you go any further. Your breath won't let you go any further. You're repeating things in your mind, activities you can't complete. And you're just, even down to making coffee, you couldn't make coffee because you're just, where did I put the coffee filter? I end up actually going from Washington State to New York State to see a neurologist. I'm hoping that with more experience, a neurologist on the East Coast can help me. And it's that neurologist that says, you know what, you obviously had it. I am seeing hundreds of patients like you, and there's nothing we can do. And so that's a big bombshell, because now you're at the point where, oh, I do have it. This is as a result of this virus. I've been trying to figure out what's been going on, and now somebody's telling me they can't help me at all. I don't know how to even explain it. It's your whole life just feels like it's gone. So, and then no one can help you. That's a very devastating moment.
With treatment, Yvonne did start to temporarily feel better, and she started teaching again.
I did that until November, when I had a really bad relapse again. So brain fog returned, heart problems started happening again, tachycardia, out of breath. I collapsed 3 times during work because I got dizzy getting up. They found I had severe anemia. They found my liver enzymes were very high.
Yvonne's life now is very different than it was before COVID.
Well, first of all, physically, I can't do the same things. I can't even do half of what I used to be able to do. But mentally, it takes a toll. My mind isn't quite the same as it used to. So I've developed skills to compensate. I do a lot more note-taking. I do a lot more sticky notes everywhere to remind myself. And I really feel like parts of my memory have just faded. That's a little bit traumatic. Then it's just not being able to function. I'm normally a very active person, having worked 2 jobs. I have 3 kids, always very active. And all of a sudden, I'm down to counting the hours and sort of counting the amount of time and energy I use during the day. It's like sort of like counting calories, but now I'm counting energy units instead. And if I go over, like this interview right now, I'm already feeling pain in my chest. So after our interview, I'll probably go to bed for the rest of the day.
Her condition has improved somewhat since then, but she still feels the effects of long-term COVID on a daily basis.
I think the one thing I'm seeing as I turn the corner with my last relapse in November, a lot of us started to fall into depression. Your life is gone. It's no longer the same. And you're physically not able to manage a regular life like you did. And there's no answers to that. So how do you do that every day and not get depressed and say, will I ever get my life back? Will I die young? Will some of this come back next year or the year after and do more harm again to my body? The fallout is all this depression for a lot of us not getting the support we need. And the other aspect is our own relatives. Some of us have relatives who don't believe that we're going through this. It's very hard for us, I think. That takes its mental toll.
Dr. Christian Sandrock is a physician who specializes in infectious diseases and pulmonary and critical care at the University of California, Davis in Sacramento. Dr. Sandrock, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hello.
From a medical perspective, doctor, how do you diagnose the long haulers?
Well, this post-acute COVID syndrome, as we like to call it, or long haulers, is tough to diagnose because, as you sort of noticed in this segment, many of the tests can actually be normal. And it's this mixture of symptoms, which are really what we call nonspecific, you know, fatigue, brain fog, lethargy. But in general, you know, having acute COVID, having an infection, and then having these cluster symptoms at some point afterwards, usually about 60 days or longer, gives you the first clue based on symptoms that they might have, you know, this long haul COVID. Secondarily, there are a number of tests that we can do, for example, pulmonary function testing, which are, you know, tests on your lungs that we do to see, you know, your lung capacity, how well oxygen moves across your lungs, some cardiac imaging that we can do as well, MRIs of your brain, certain things where we might see some deficits we shouldn't otherwise see in a younger, healthy person, even after an infection. And that can just be some added help for the diagnosis. But we still don't have a great sense of what is the classic diagnostic criteria. And, you know, the scientific community is still forming that together now.
Dr. Sandrock, there is some data on this. So far, what we know is that about a third of the people who were never hospitalized for COVID still say they have long-term symptoms. At about two-thirds of people who were hospitalized for COVID also say they have long-term symptoms. Can you draw any conclusions from this preliminary data?
Well, the data that shows one-third just came out from Washington State in a letter in JAMA just last week, which, you know, even less than a week ago, which was really the first data looking at people who were never hospitalized. And the reason that becomes important is we know if you come into the hospital with an acute illness, say it was a trauma, say you have influenza, severe sepsis, any of these severe infections, and you have a prolonged hospital stay in the ICU, you're on life support, you get sedation, you're put in a coma, we already know that that's going to lead to many of the symptoms you heard here from this this patient from Washington State. So we know that fatigue, depression, lethargy, decreased exercise tolerance, all of these things will sort of come with that hospital illness. So it becomes important to say, what is that severe hospitalization and what's actually COVID and related to this post-COVID syndrome? So that's why these studies have become important, that we're now really seeing that people who never were in the hospital, never saw a doctor, are having symptoms now, you know, a year out, 6 months out, even, you know, 3 months out. And I think that becomes really important, that this is a real syndrome. And one of the first steps we like to focus on is validation in our patients that, no, you're not crazy and you have a cluster of symptoms which are really nonspecific, but this is all part of what COVID has done to your body.
We just heard from someone who says that this is Yvonne, who said, described her symptoms pretty clearly. Dr. Sandrock, would you say that Yvonne's symptoms are typical for what's known as acute COVID post syndrome?
Absolutely.
Not have gotten the medical definition there accurate.
Not a problem. We in the, you know, this community, in the scientific community, are trying to even diagnose it. And, you know, we just like to say post-COVID because it sort of implies you're not infectious, which is key. And, you know, she is very classic. So a mixture of, you know, brain fog, some physical findings like shortness of breath, high heart rate, inability to have any stamina and do exercise. And then what, you know, is also important is what you talked about at the end, this kind of reactive depression where you really have depression from the infection, but also depression from your, you know, post-acute COVID syndrome where you're really, your life is not the same and you can't do what you've done before. And that includes loss of taste and smell, which is really key.
Dr. Sandrock, we heard Yvonne at the very top of the previous segment talking about not just her symptoms as a COVID long hauler, but also her struggle going to different doctors and trying to identify what this thing is that she was feeling. And you mentioned validating patients earlier so that they don't feel like they're crazy or that they're, that the doctors don't believe them. How important is that for doctors to do?
I think, you know, with any disease, honestly, validation is important. And, you know, we get trained in our medical career to really focus on, okay, you have an abnormal test result or an abnormal finding on physical exam, and that sort of correlates with a disease state. And it's hard in this post-COVID phase to sometimes find some abnormalities, but we are seeing clearly enough people, and we know from other illnesses, that these kind of non-specific symptoms can persist. And I think it really is important to let people know they're not crazy. Life is moving fast. They can't move fast for a whole host of other reasons. And we need to adjust life so that they can slowly recover. And, you know, that really is the first process, because to not be validated really, you know, and we hear about a lot of depression, anxiety, and the psychological effects of chronic disease. We know that, you know, not knowing what your illness is and not being validated really leads to worse outcomes in those areas down the line. And that's the first thing, and a simple thing that we can prevent. You know, this is something our patients are feeling. I can't contradict what they're feeling. And I think it's important for a lot of doctors to start with that and then really look at ways to really help patients out, whether they have abnormal test results, we can really focus specific treatments on, or whether we have to look at lifestyle changes.
Doctor, is this, you mentioned chronic, other chronic illnesses, and I'm wondering if what we're seeing here with COVID long haulers in particular indicates that COVID-19 itself could become similar to a chronic illness, like I'm thinking things like autoimmune issues like lupus or other fibromyalgia or other things that are difficult for people to see, but that are still affecting patients.
Yeah, I think that's that obviously remains to be seen as we're sort of early in this process. But I think you raise a really good point, is the chronicity of this and whether it parallels other, you know, post infection syndromes we see, such as chronic fatigue or other autoimmune diseases, such as lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, or even fibromyalgia. And a lot of the symptoms we're seeing really overlap very closely. So that's one of the areas where we can say, okay, what have we done with fibromyalgia? What have we done with chronic fatigue in the past? And can some of those treatments help here? There are some unique features to this post-acute COVID phase that are very unique to COVID. So I want to be distinctive with that, that it's not exactly the same as those other disease states, but there are some parallels, which I think, you know, could turn long-term, or they may, this may be a distinct process from those, but have enough similarities that we can overlap treatments.
Does the age of the person who had COVID-19 matter when it comes to who is more likely or less likely to experience long-term effects from COVID-19?
You know, that's an interesting question. And we are seeing sort of two groups of risks. And the risk for developing a post-acute COVID syndrome are really largely unknown. There are a few studies out there looking at the risks. And obviously, if you came in and had a few risks for more severe disease, diabetes, hypertension, and obesity, as an example, we know you're going to have a more severe COVID infection, and that more severe infection might lead to increased likelihood of a post-acute COVID syndrome. But there are a group of patients who are generally younger that are, and again, don't have any risks and are actually having post-acute COVID syndrome. So there was a study out of the UK that, particularly when we looked at psychological and neurologic effects of COVID, they were much higher in the age groups between about 20 and 50 as they were in the age groups of 60, 70, and 80. So there may be some trends, but I think we have a lot more research to do. The NIH is putting a call out for funding in this area. So hopefully in the next year or two, we'll have a lot more research. Not very comforting for our patients to hear where it's going to be a, you know, some time before we have data. But I think it's really important to realize that this is not age specific, and we can't just think it's older patients who've had severe COVID. It's also young patients who are really otherwise healthy. The youngest patient I saw a patient last week who was 19. It's pretty hard to see someone who's debilitated at 19 and otherwise was healthy.
Doctor, two final questions for you as we round out the segment here. Are there any medical treatments that you see that are promising? And finally, are those folks who are suffering from COVID long term, are they able to apply for things like disability in the meantime?
Oh, two great questions. So treatment is sort of a big black box right now. And I think the only thing I've seen that's worked with my patients, and again, I don't have scientific data, is that number one, it's the treatment is individualized. And number two, it involves lifestyle changes. Now, there may be specific treatment. So for example, the first patient at the top of the segment here who had chest pain and shortness of breath, if we found she had some abnormalities, an example, had some clotting in her lungs, we could put her on a blood thinner. Those are specific treatments based on specific issues we have. Maybe her oxygen level's low, we give her oxygen. Of course, we're going to do that. But for the global syndrome, really lifestyle changes are the only things I've seen that have helped. So again, if you need to take a nap, we take a nap. If you need to slow down your life a little bit, if there needs to be some yoga, meditation, nutrition changes, really pacing your life as it moves fast and you now move slower in this post-illness phase, we need to do so. But that raises the second question you have, which is if you're working full-time, how do you then manage your full-time job when you, after 2 hours, you have to take a nap? And how do you slow your day down when you have a fast-paced job? And we see that with a lot of my coworkers in healthcare who have a post-acute COVID syndrome. Healthcare is fast-paced. We're moving in the ICU constantly, and they can't quite keep up. And how do we then support them through that phase? And yes, people are able to apply for disability. But again, if you have a concrete test abnormality, it's much easier than if you have a group of symptoms that are really less specific. And that's one of the challenges we have as well.
Dr. Sanrock, one last question for you. You mentioned healthcare workers also bearing the brunt of this. How are you coping in this moment? We know that healthcare workers have also dealt with a lot.
Yeah, that's also a great question. I guess I'm still alive and I'm coping okay, but it has been a very long year, and I can easily say with many of my colleagues as well that this has been the worst year we've had, and it's extremely exhausting to not only manage the pandemic in the acute phase, but to also deal with this aftermath, particularly with both our colleagues and with our patients. So it's been a challenging year at best, but we're holding up okay. And that's sort of what we trained for, right? This is our job, this is what we signed up for. We didn't plan to do this every day, but this is unfortunately what we trained for, and we're proud to do it.
Well, we appreciate you and your colleagues out there doing this very difficult and important work. Dr. Christian Sanrock is an infectious diseases and pulmonary and critical care physician at the University of California, Davis Health in Sacramento. Dr. Sanrock, thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Christian Georgiou from South San Francisco. I had lingering symptoms from COVID for about a month after I was cleared. Mainly, I was out of breath. I got tired really quick, and I had like stabbing needle-like pains inside my lungs on and off. And I also had some strange visual phenomena and sent me to get an eye exam. I'm pretty much back to normal now, I guess, but it was pretty stressful for about a month or so.
My name is Philip Gutman. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California. I contracted COVID on a work trip to New York City last March. My symptoms progressed to severe COVID, and I was eventually intubated and placed on a ventilator for 23 days. I was in the hospital for over 2 months before I was released. I felt very lucky to have survived, and I was told that I would make a full recovery, but it's come with a lot along the way, and it hasn't been easy, and there are a lot of things that still remain uncertain. The first couple months of being home from the hospital, I was in rough shape. So rough, in fact, that I had to go and stay with a dear friend to help look after me day to day, stuff that came up at night. A lot of the stuff that initially came up for me was severe leg cramps, severe headaches and earaches, anxiety, PTSD, and getting fatigued and exhausted easily and having to sleep and lay down.
This is Jenny from Lakeland, Florida. I had COVID really early, last April, actually, and it took me about 21 days to get back to work. It's almost a year later, and I'm still experiencing after effects. I have some days where my chest feels really tight, congestion, but sometimes it gets so bad that I actually bought an over-the-counter inhaler. I get short of breath pretty easily, and I'm still just tired all the time.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.